Hello everybody, and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness with Ant-Man and Steve. It's good to be back.
It is indeed.
Yeah, good to be here again. So this is episode 18, and it's all about political correctness, a very controversial topic. And it's actually called Political Correctness Uncovered, because what we're going to do is, in the next hour or so, attempt to pick it apart and, you know, relay to all our listeners what the real meaning is, Steve, because obviously there's quite a few agendas at play, isn't there?
It's a huge amount. It's a huge subject in itself, but just finding out where it's all come from, examples of it.
So we'll start with a definition. Anyway, what we like to do on Discerning Consciousness. So this is from the Oxford English Dictionary online version, quite succinct. So it defines political correctness as the avoidance of forms of expression or action that are perceived to exclude, marginalise or insult groups of people who are socially disadvantaged or discriminated against. That sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
It sounds like a great idea.
Love to live in a world like that, wouldn't you, Steve?
What's wrong with that? That sounds perfect.
Yeah, shall we end it now?
And that's where the problem is, isn't it? It sounds like a lovely idea. And as an ideal, it's you can't argue with it. The problem is where it gets taken to and how it gets used.
And you know, someone that's come from having done a lot of conspiracy research in the past, as I've spoken about on Discerning Consciousness, it's the wolf in sheep's clothing syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a disguise for some other agenda by all accounts. I mean, the idea that you don't offend people, that you don't say anything or do anything that would be offensive to other people. I think we know it is a lovely ideal, but is practically impossible.
Yes, it's the nature of human beings. You know, people are going to get offended.
Yes,
you know.
And what offends you and what offends me, we know.
Absolutely,
there'll be completely different things. There are plenty of things that I find hugely offensive. And other people don't. There are things that they find hugely offensive and I don't.
Yeah, but that's the wonder of life, isn't
it? Yes. I mean, the classic example is foul language. There are words that some people find hugely offensive and I find some of them hugely funny.
And as we were talking about earlier, I think we do need to be sensitive to that fact, because some people do find the C word, there you go, I didn't say the whole thing, self-censure, zip. Do find it, like my mum and, you know, people of her generation, it's you know, historically it's been seen to be such an offensive word. I think it's almost offensive for me to say, oh, it's just a word. Yeah. It's just a vocalisation. On some level, you do have to accept.
But if you go back far enough, if you go back to the 17th, 18th century, it was a word in common usage.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we know that these things change over time.
Yeah, the meaning we attribute to words does change all the time. So
So what can be considered acceptable to some would not be acceptable to others, and that will change over time. But what we're talking about here is probably not a naturally formed, organic, almost social acceptance of what's okay.
So we'll jump straight in now. So political correctness. The real roots of political correctness can be traced back to the 1920s and the formation of an influential school of academics called the Frankfurt School, which was formed in Frankfurt, funnily enough.
Yes.
All places. I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have heard of the Frankfurt School.
Not a normal sort of school, certainly at the time it was formed.
No.
Not in our parlance of a school.
No. So some of the key figures were Erich Fromm, well-known writer. I've got some of his books. Very good writer, actually. Adorno and Horkheimer, Lukács, Münzenberg. These are just some of the academics who were there at the time. So these were Marxist academics who wished to promote a new movement called cultural Marxism. So that's the political element, isn't it?
Yes.
Is cultural Marxism.
Yes.
Because a lot of people say, well, political correctness, where's the political element? Well, that's the roots of it.
Yeah, and I think there was also a case of, certainly with the Communist Party in Russia, people that applied the party line were spoken about disparagingly as being politically correct.
Sure, because that's where it came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
So,
So his intention really was to replace Christianity as the main bedrock of belief in Western societies at that time, obviously, because back in the earlier part of the 20th century or the early part of the 20th century, Christianity and the established church obviously had much more influence than it has now, Steve.
Yeah, and we've seen how there's been a subversion of what you'd call would be the more common religion within Western Europe over a period of time.
Mm-hmm. Degradation.
And you know, again, some of that would be an organic, natural change.
Yeah.
That does happen over time. Some of it will be self-inflicted by those particular religions. And we are talking about the religions themselves, not the belief system that's underlying them.
Not the more extremist element within all religions, yeah. So the main point really was, or their belief, if you will, was that culture had to be transformed first before the revolution could take place. So it was never going to be a traditional revolution, you know, an armed revolution. It was more insidious than that, which would come about through cultural change and transforming society through cultural change. So the key mechanism for this was the creation of victim groups based on ethnic, social, sexual orientation and religion. And the intention, as we have seen and are seeing, I should say, is to radicalise these groups, excuse me, emphasising division, resentment and victimhood. The victim then could be used as a kind of scapegoat to attack traditional Christian cultural values.
Yeah.
And the agenda, as again we can see in the modern era, is hidden by Orwellian newspeak, such as words as progressive and egalitarianism, which, as we know, don't mean what they're said to mean.
No, it's again, it's another way of hiding what you really want to do with nice words.
It's all cloak and daggers. So the dissemination of such ideas were encapsulated in the notion of critical theory. And this was widely promoted in academia, politics, pop culture and accepted thinking at the time. So it's a criticism of the main elements of Western culture, including the following: Christianity, capitalism, authority, the family, patriarchy, morality, tradition, sexual restraint, loyalty, patriotism, nationalism, heredity, ethnocentrism, convention and conservatism. So these are all sort of things that were going to be overrided by the shift.
Yeah, and if you were to look at some of the policies of the, certainly in Europe, of the European Union, you can see where they've obviously taken some of those ideas and based their policies on those ideas.
Mm.
This free movement of trade, where you're allowing people from different ethnic backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds to move around, starts to break that all down. You lose your cultural identity or your heritage.
Mm.
And that's obviously come directly out of the work of the Frankfurt School.
And that actually leads into what we're going to talk about now, which is the main aims of the Frankfurt School. And this is quite an exhaustive list of 11 points. And for me, we were talking about just before coming on air, this essentially is a framework for modern British and American, you know, and European society. So I'll read them to you. The first one is, number one is the creation of racism offences. Number two is continual change to create confusion. I mean, we can see that even in the workplace, where you'll have new ways of working constantly being imposed on people and where they're having to reapply for their job. So in different areas of life, there's no continuity, is there?
No, there's
constant. We have to, we're told, well, you know, change is a constant. You just have to accept it. But I believe that just creates stress, and that's all part of the programming.
Yeah, and if you're stressed and worried about that sort of change, or the fact that what you can or can't say, you're not seeing anything else that's going on to any great degree, are you?
Absolutely. The third point, again, which is very pertinent, is the teaching of sex and homosexuality to children. And we've seen numerous, haven't we, Steve, examples in the press whereby children as young as 6 and 7 are being taught, you know, how to use strap-on dildos and such things. And it's just really, is actually an affront. It's a moral affront.
And this is where you'd see if you were to take the definition of political correctness, you could say, well, how can that be accepted?
Exactly.
That shouldn't be accepted in any way.
No.
And yet, what actually gets pushed as not accepted are things that are in most cases, a lot less harmful.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is doing potentially emotional, psychological damage to children, and effectively telling them that if they don't want that sort of relationship, they're not normal.
Mm. And also what it's communicates to children, I believe, is the normal, say, exploration that we might have had as kids is no longer the norm. And,
no.
it's presenting to children a norm around sexuality, which I say is actually a perversion.
Yes, and it's a almost deliberate promotion of an increased sexual activity.
Sure. Beyond a healthy balance, yeah. Which would, you know, mean that maybe other areas of their life wouldn't be brought into such focus. So they may be less inclined towards pursuing, say, a spiritual journey or discovering other aspects of themselves. That's why we have this homosexual agenda and lesbian agenda shoved down our throats, pardon the pun.
Yes, it's, yeah. And like I say, if people choose that particular lifestyle,
absolutely, that's their
absolutely their choice. It's their wish. It's whatever they want. And to turn around and say that it is not acceptable is, again, that's not right. If that's what they choose, the problem is when it's, this is normal, this is what you should be doing. And if you say, well, actually, I don't think that is right or that's normal, then you must have some problem with it. You must be homophobic.
Or intolerant or extremist.
Yeah. And, you know, there's plenty of people that have made certain comments about it. Technically, well, biologically, same sex is a evolutionary cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to claim as my own. That is a comedian that came up with that one. But it is. And, okay, we know that there are methods that can allow same-sex partners to have children.
Mm.
And they're developing methods whereby they probably won't need male and females at all to be able to do that.
That's the ultimate aim, isn't
yeah.
it?
But again, biologically, is that normal? No, it's not.
No.
To procreate, you normally have a male and
sure.
a female. Even if it's in certain situations with certain animals, ones that have actually effectively transgendered. That still does happen, but that's a rarity. Typically, biologically, it's male and female, and that's what produces the offspring.
What I often think is if, say, the natural world had followed the path of humanity, it would have ceased to exist.
Probably it would have spun around and disappeared up its own backside.
Absolutely. So moving on to point four, again, this is from the main aims of the Frankfurt School. Again, it's a very personal point. The undermining of schools and teachers' authority. And again, we've seen numerous examples in the press, and I'm sure from your own children's education, whereby teachers are, you know, have tried to apply fair discipline, and you know, the child has gone to the parent and said, you know, this is unfair, and in some instances, parents will go so far as to threaten legal action. We have all these sorts of things happening because this authority is being undermined. And I'm not saying we should go back to a Victorian type system.
No, but then you also now get to the point where the teachers are so indoctrinated in it, and they're so, I guess, to some degree, afraid of the repercussions of not following this policy, that they apply it basically without any thought.
Yes.
There's been cases of people having the wrong images on their lunch boxes. And what we're talking about is images of superheroes. You know, you're like, really? And well, that promotes a violent attitude, and that is considered as wrong. And you're like, but again, this is undermining, to a large degree, it's undermining the teachers because they're having to push something which is just not really logical. And then you look at it and say, well, six-year-olds being taught about sex aids, and you try and balance it out with kids being told they can't have superheroes on their lunchbox covers.
Yeah,
it's just not balanced.
It causes actually like a fracturing of the human psyche, and it's damaging people to that degree. We won't go into that now. That's for another episode. But you know, that's how destructive this process is.
Yeah.
Moving on to number five again. You know, it's the perfect example of modern British society. huge immigration to destroy identity. Again, mass immigration,
yeah.
which we've seen, whereby apparently we're all the same in this multicultural, diverse world. Cultural and traditional, you know, heritage, they matter not a jot, you know, and it is absolutely ridiculous.
And again, with that, when you look at some of the precursor movements to the European Union, that was part of their agenda, was to end up with a mixed European race. The pan-European Union.
Yeah.
That was part of its agenda, was to have a mixed European race.
Brown people.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And again, to some degree, that is to break down your individuality to make it easier for you to be effectively controlled.
Absolutely. It breaks down your traditional ties to kith and kin and family.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of much more easily seduced by the mono mainstream corporate culture.
Yeah.
And you can see that, you know, in Britain, whereby a lot of the recent immigrants are, you know, very much, they wear the labels of the corporate society.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they are more easily seduced, because we've kind of lived through that for 50 years and we know it's a nightmare. Whereas new people coming in have almost got to have a generation of living it before they have that realization, because they're coming from more traditional cultures.
But if you're in a situation where you say, well, actually, I don't feel that this is right, that this is how we should be leading our lives in this particular country, then you're racist.
Yeah.
You're intolerant, old-fashioned, jingoistic. You look at what happened in the response to Brexit. Mm. If you look at what happened in the response to Trump in the US, all of those things ended up driving that sort of response certly from the political left, that these people that voted for what the political left didn't want were obviously intolerant,
sure,
racist, sexist.
Sure. To the degree where people were, you know, verbally attacking one another in the street. Yeah.
And in some cases, physically attacking one another in the street.
Sure.
And, you know, you get down to the... It's something that will appear in the interval.
Mm.
But you get down to the sticks and stones may break my bones.
Mm.
And that was certainly something I was taught. And if people say things to you, fine, whatever, you know.
Mm.
And people are entitled to their own opinion. And to be able to voice those opinions used to be something we held very, very dear. Mm. Yes, I agree that they should not, without some recourse, be able to say things that are overtly hurtful or destructive.
Mm.
And they definitely shouldn't be allowed to have those words used against people in any way.
Mm.
But it still comes down to their words.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's all there.
And are we going to pander to the people who are offended the most easiest?
Yeah, and that, as I alluded to earlier, if you look at it, there are things that offend me. And do I raise them as issues? No, I don't.
Mm.
There has to be a balance. There has to be somewhere where you say, well, that's gone too far. And that's what used to happen with society. Society would give us that balance.
It had a natural built-in sort of kilter almost.
And now what we appear to be doing is we are pandering to the most sensitive.
Mm.
We're pandering to to try and ensure that we don't offend anyone for any reason whatsoever.
I find it offensive when the LGBT flag flies above the headquarters of my local authority.
And that's not because you in any way have a hatred of of those people.
I just
that
hate
that
what it's inferring.
Yeah. Like we said earlier, it's a case of if people want to lead that life, then that's fine.
Mm.
But does it have to be promoted to the point where if you don't agree with it, you're seen as being in the wrong?
Mm.
And if you're going to get balance, why is it that a normal heterosexual relationship isn't promoted to the same degree?
That's a great point, yeah. It isn't, is it?
No. Why don't they have happily married flags waving at
In the same way that, you know, you'll watch most dramas now on UK-based TV, and the main characters will be completely screwed up. They won't be in normal relationships. They have a very dark psychology, which they almost celebrate. And, you know, all these perverted norms that are promoted in the media now.
Yeah, and it is a case of those are the ones that they are trying to say, this is normal, this is how you should see your self developing into.
Mm.
And if you're not, you're not normal. Mm. And so what's wrong with you?
And the effect that has on children is you know, deeply profound.
Yeah.
But moving on, again, carry on with the main names of the Frankfurt schools. They are very interesting. The next one is point six, the promotion of excessive drinking. We can see, well, in terms of the fact that here in the UK, the cost of alcohol has come down over the years. That's why the pubs have closed. You can get alcohol very cheaply in our supermarkets.
Yeah.
It's widely advertised. Yeah. There's no restrictions.
Yeah. You know. And the negative effects of it are laughingly promoted. Mm. You can't say that they give it the full and necessary promotion that it should have. And again, why have they done it to the point where it is easier and cheaper for you to drink at home instead of in the pub?
Mm.
Because in the pub, you would have a more normal social atmosphere. You're less likely to drink quite as much in most typical cases.
Mm.
Because there are other people there that will not be drinking as much. You tend to follow that sort of norm, that sort of general behaviour. If you're constantly getting absolutely, completely gone in a pub, you won't be allowed back to that pub.
No, sure.
Because of your...
There's a regulation process, essentially.
And so we don't want pubs then, do we?
No.
Because if you have the pubs, then it self-regulates itself to a degree.
Yeah.
And I'm not suggesting that that always happens, but to a degree. But it's not in any way self-regulated at home, unless it's by other family members, which then is likely to cause that discourse within the family, which then breaks the family up more.
Mm, absolutely. So moving on to point seven, which was described as the emptying of churches, and we can see how modern society is largely atheistic.
Yeah.
People are almost decried now for coming out as Christian, aren't they? Laughed at.
Yeah. Yeah, it's any belief system, if you admit to following any belief system, then typically what happens is, well, why do you believe that?
Mm.
It doesn't matter whether it's Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam. It doesn't matter what it is.
Mm.
If you have a belief system, well, why do you believe that?
Mm.
And
there's... Almost seen it's outdated.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And also in terms of emptying of churches, if we can see it as an attack on Christianity, we've had numerous examples where people have been sacked or threatened with the sack for wearing the cross, the Christian cross at work. So, you know, that's an example of attack on expression of Christianity.
And yet there are other individuals that will wear certain clothing.
But they can wear the hijab.
Yeah.
Or
even though that is based on a religious belief.
Again, it's the contradiction
at
play. So moving on to point eight, is an unreliable legal system with bias against victims of crime. And again, we've seen examples here of the UK where, certainly with driving, quite serious driving offences where people have been killed and they literally get off scot-free.
Yeah, and almost to the point where the victim is the person that has to pay for the crime that they've been
absolutely
actually the victim of.
Yeah.
Ludicrous in the extreme, almost to the point where you're saying that you're trying to dissuade people from actually bringing cases against other people. But it's not in even just this country, is it?
And, you know, as we're coming through this list, it's very disturbing because there's this sense in which I feel... It's this undermining of everything that we believe to be true and moral.
Yes.
It's, again, horrible to say this word, but it is a perversion of norms.
Yes. And again, we go back to the start and we go to the actual definition, and you'd say there's a lot of things that we're talking about here that by the actual definition of political correctness, they would fall foul of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're promoted as being politically correct.
Mm. And in the second section, we'll go into some more examples of that in greater detail. So point nine was dependency on the state or state benefits. And again, we can see certainly with the explosion of single mums and that there's increasing emphasis and reliance on the benefit system generally. I mean, the impoverishment of people increases year on year, again, creating more of a need for people to rely on benefits. So this, which, you know, was one of their main aims in the 1920s, you can see is perfect. Yeah. It's played out perfectly in modern society.
Yeah, and you're breaking down the family unit.
Yeah.
If you're breaking down the family unit, your only other recourse, if you have a problem, will be to go to some more official-based system,
mm.
be it you go and talk to teachers at school if you're a child, or you go and talk to youth leaders or things like that,
mm.
Rather than the actual, your parents.
Sure, the organic unit.
Yeah, and the difficulty there is that you can't speak to generally to both of them because only one of them's around.
Because, mm. of course, the key component of the communist agenda was that your parents would be the state.
Yes.
So going on to point 10, was control and dumbing down of media. Again, that doesn't really need any further explanation. We'll be here all day.
Yeah, I think that one's already proven, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of baked in the cake. And then the last point 11, which we've touched upon, is encouraging the breakdown of the family.
Yeah.
Again, which we can see is pretty much what's happened. Just lastly, to finish on the Frankfurt School, got a couple of quotes here for our listeners to ponder. Very interesting. The first one was from Antonio Gramsci, who I believe was an Italian Marxist in the 20s and 30s, a leading Marxist during that era. His words are very pertinent. He said, "The Western world has been thoroughly saturated with Christianity for 2,000 years. Any country grounded in Judeo-Christian values cannot therefore be overthrown until those roots are cut. But to cut the roots, to change the culture, a long march through the institutions is necessary. Only then will power fall into our laps like ripened fruit." As I say, very pertinent words. And again, it's this way in which bringing down the existing system, culture, beliefs, yeah, insidiously from within.
Yeah, and rightly or wrongly, you'd have to say that the majority of the Western Europe and certainly the Western world has been historically Christian-based,
yes,
religion.
Yeah, so, for all its ills, again, yeah, we're not saying that,
no, we're not saying,
you know, Christianity
right
is necessarily, yeah, this golden, you know, moral example. But I would add, you know, the main, how should we say, values of Christianity devoid of the dogma are good things.
Yeah, but as I said before, you look at what's written down as the definition of political correctness, you look at what's written down as the belief behind Christianity, you'd have to be a very harsh or strange person to say that those are, mm, are wrong. Mm. They're very, very good values to lead your life by.
They're almost
by.
Just sort of common sense.
Yeah, and in most belief systems, those values are common sense, good values that you would say that most people would aspire to.
Mm. And this second quote by Willy Munzenberg, again, who was one of the founding fathers of the Frankfurt School, he said, "To organise the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink, only then, after they have corrupted all its values and made life impossible, can we impose the dictatorship of the proletariat." I think that says it all, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, although, again, you could look at it and say, well, the proletariat, that's saying the common people, but we know that that's not what they're looking at doing.
No, no. I mean, when they say the proletariat, it's kind of a huge misnomer, really, isn't, yeah, it, Steve?
Yes.
So we're going to just take a break now, finishing up on section one. We've gone in a little bit of detail about the Frankfurt School, which I think is really important to gain an understanding of political correctness. And in section two, we're going to be looking more in greater detail at things like discrimination, minority rights, fake equality, national differences, postmodernism, and the dreaded health and safety. So we've got a bit of a comical interlude coming up.
Yeah.
So we'll see you all on the other side for part two.
And then we have political correctness, which is the joy that is the other side of health and safety, which is health and safety, which is a small oppression of our physical movement, so we can't do anything without permission from the state. And political correctness is the oppression of our intellectual movement, so no one says anything anymore in case somebody else gets offended. What happens if you say that and someone gets offended? Well, they can be offended. What's wrong with being offended? When did sticks and stones may break my bones stop being relevant? Isn't that what you teach children, for God's sake? That's what you teach toddlers. He called me an idiot. Don't worry about him. He's a dick. Now you have adults going, I was offended. I was offended and I have rights. Well, so what? Be offended. Nothing happens. You're an adult. Grow up. Deal with it. I was offended. I don't care. Nothing happens when you're offended. There's nothing. I went to the comedy show and the comedian said something about the Lord and I was offended. And when I woke up in the morning, I had leprosy. Nothing happens. I want to live in democracy, but I never want to be offended again. Well, you're an idiot. A law about offending people. How do you make it an offense to offend people? Being offended is subjective. That has everything to do with you as an individual or a collective or a group or a society or a community, your moral conditioning, your religious beliefs. What offends me may not offend you. And you want to make laws about this? I'm offended when I see boy bands, for God's sake. It's a valid offense. I'm offended. They're corporate shills posing as musicians to further a modeling career, and frankly, I'm disgusted. Right? Well, what am I going to do? Call the cops? Hello, it's me again. They're on the telly this time. Five of them, that's it. Yeah, white suits, dancing like girls, that's them. 5 minutes, I'll be out the front traumatised. Bye.
Okay, welcome back everyone to part two of Discerning Consciousness.
Yeah, welcome back.
Episode 18 called Political Correctness Uncovered. We hope you enjoyed a little interlude there. So just to bring a bit of balance on the discussion here, we feel that people are waking up to this subversive agenda, political correctness, and that's been reflected in the recent Brexit vote and the election of Trump.
Yeah, if you look at... certainly if you look at where that was all predicted to go,
yeah,
and where it ended up, it didn't end up in the same place.
Mm.
And there's many reasons for it, but certainly Trump was very, very open in his talks about the politically correct agenda that was being pushed by Clinton.
I mean, he was quite openly sort of anti-immigration.
Yes.
You know, he spoke about building this wall, whether it's ridiculous or not. And the interesting thing for me, Steve, and probably for our listeners, is he smashed right through. I mean, I don't necessarily like the guy. That's irrelevant. Okay?
Yeah.
But he's not part of the elite agenda from my mind. He smashed through this whole left-right agenda because there must have been millions of black, you know, Americans and Hispanics, right, who voted for him,
yes,
in spite of everything he was saying.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even, you know, what we're talking about here, his comment, I think, about, was it someone in a wheelchair? I don't remember it. I thought that was quite offensive. That, for me, went over into the realm of being offensive.
Yeah. But again, if you look at some of the comments here for the Brexit vote, and there were Indians, there were Pakistanis, that were saying this immigration has got out of hand in
Absolutely.
This country.
Yeah.
So even people that were immigrants in this country were saying we've gone too far.
Absolutely. I had a recent conversation with a young lady who's Polish, and she said she's fed up with, you know, these Poles coming over here, tarnishing the reputation of Poles because they've just come here to, you know, get a better quality of life. They were lazy, you know, lazy good for nothings in Poland. They've come over here, and you know, they're just sponging off the state, and this is a young lady who's Polish.
Yeah. So to turn around and say that, I mean, this is something that has been pushed massively, certainly within the media. And we've talked about the media being effectively controlled. We've talked about the way that the Frankfurt School has
key
that
component.
Yes, one of its key components.
Yeah.
And if you were to have voted for Brexit, if you were to have voted for Trump, by definition, according to certainly a lot of the media, you must be a racist, ignorant,
intolerant, bigoted, misogynist.
Yeah, you must be, because you voted for these people. It doesn't matter whether actually you found the other way more offensive and you're only given a choice of two.
But this is what is breaking down now, this sort of polarity between left and right. It's like with me, people I know, friends and family, were surprised that I voted to leave the EU, because they see that as a right-wing agenda. You know, historically, I'm coming from sort of left-wing, socialist, anarchistic roots, if you like. So they couldn't quite get it in their heads.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, there are certainly some people I know of. I know of one individual who his fiance, her boss was horrified that her fiance may have considered voting to leave the EU. Mm. And as such, how could she see herself staying with such a person? It's, you're like, what? You know,
expression of view.
Yeah, where's healthy discussion gone? Where's a different point of view gone from? It's. I don't see any issue in having a different point of view about something. Mm. In some ways, we learn things about, certainly about people, but also about events, because yes, we will all look at things from our own perspective. Mm. We will all taint them. I think it's actually a basis of quantum physics that just by looking at something, you actually change it.
The observer effect.
Yeah. Mm. So that in itself says that, yeah, we will not see it as it necessarily happened. I think the phrase I've always liked is there's three sides to every story. Mm. There's yours, there's mine, and there's the truth.
Mm, there's the objective truth.
And so any of the press that we get, we know is not going to be objectively true.
That's a great point you make there, Steve, because I'm sure our listeners agree. They've noticed that that's, for me, where things are becoming more intolerant. If you notice, in modern society, where we can't bear one another's opinions. No. And I think that's part of the agenda, because it's the divide and rule symptom, isn't it?
And again, if you go back to the old days, certainly back to pubs, there would be people having arguments about anything. Mm. Didn't matter what it was. But
good-hearted.
Yeah. And in general, you would then go, you know, next week, and you'd buy that person a drink. Mm. And you'd then sit down and you might have a conversation where you both agreed on everything. Mm. Healthy discussion should never be a problem.
And I think in a world of Facebook and social media in general, where it's all about what we like and what we dislike, it's my playlist, it's, you know, what appeals to me, we can't bear, you know, to think of anything that doesn't, you know, stroke our ego. It's pathetic. Yeah. It's like a maladjustment on our psychology.
If you don't like what I like, I'm going to unfriend you.
Yeah. Precisely, yeah, good point. Yeah, it is like emotional retardation, isn't it?
Yeah, and there are plenty of things that I see with friends of mine on the likes of Facebook, things like that, and I look at that and I think, no, sorry. Mm. But do I turn around to them and say, what are you thinking? Mm. And I'm sure there's plenty of things that I post and they're thinking, why has he posted that?
Yeah,
has he completely lost the plot? But that's something that I like.
Sure. And we all make a choice to be on Facebook. That's what makes me laugh. It's like, you know, it's not air. You don't need it. It's like you've chosen to have an account and log on. You can just say, right, because like people
I'm not going on Facebook
for a month.
But the people that like you massage your ego. Yeah, so you go, great. And the people that you don't, you have arguments with. And that ends up being, in some cases, entertainment.
Yeah.
But
it can be, but then it gets very short-lived.
until you end up with it being unfriended.
Yeah.
So there's an awful lot of stuff out there that is not probably socially acceptable and yet is politically correct. Mm. And there's a load of stuff out there that's probably socially acceptable but isn't considered politically correct. Mm. And you look at how it's been treated with Trump, with Brexit, with those, certainly with a lot of those issues there, and you'd say that anyone that went the wrong way according to the populist media, you are a bad person.
I'd say the media are scrambling a bit, the mainstream media, because they don't know how to cover it. Of course they can't cover it in terms of people reacting to political correctness, because it's a hidden, covert agenda. So, you know, you'll see academics, politicians going on, say, Newsnight and Question Time. Well, it's a It's a populist reaction to elite rule. It's not quite as simple as that. That's how they want to couch this reaction.
Yeah, and it's because we're tired of the toffs.
Yes.
Just getting everything their way.
Yeah.
And they wanted it, so it's just it's just a protest vote.
Yeah.
I don't believe that that is the case. No. I think it's
much more deeper than that. That's why I think they're a bit scared.
And it's a huge disservice to the bulk of the voters that would have voted for the opposite to what was wanted.
Sure.
To suggest that they were not aware of what they wanted. They didn't understand the issues fully.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And, okay, maybe there are certain issues that people didn't understand fully, but that will only be because they didn't get the information clearly enough.
Sure.
And where should we have got that information from? The popular press.
Absolutely.
So who's at fault?
And I won't go into too much more detail about Brexit, but this legal challenge that this woman brought, who now apparently can't go out in public, it's so staged. So staged, isn't it?
If you needed a legal challenge to, or if it needed to be ratified in the House of Commons for us to leave, why didn't it need to be ratified in the House of Commons for us to join?
Absolutely.
You know, it's the same rules. It's whether you like or not the decision of the people in a democratic society, which is what we are meant to
be. Should be final.
The bulk of the majority, and yes, you can argue it wasn't a percentage-wise a massive majority, but if you had that amount of people standing outside your door knocking on it saying, oi, this is what we want to happen, you'd be a bit concerned. The majority of people said one way.
Mm.
And what's the problem with that?
Mm.
It will be different if it happens. But to turn around and challenge it and to do everything you can and to pour all this money into it and to even turn around and say, this won't happen in this country now because of this vote, it's just ludicrous scare tactics. Mm.
So if we bring our discussion back to
where we
political
should be.
Correctness.
I know.
And the whole idea of the fact that it's about trying to eliminate discrimination. Right, the interesting thing about the word to discriminate, and I heard this on a recent recording of Neil Cramer, he was talking about the word discriminate, and I hadn't thought about it before. It was very interesting. That actually the word discriminate just means to distinguish or to discern.
Yes.
So we discriminate when we choose who our life partner is.
Yes.
Very politically correct. Our wife, our husband.
Yes.
Who our friends are, where we choose to live, where we choose to work. You know, who our acquaintances are, which food we choose to eat, etc., etc. I could go on.
Yeah.
But that's all a process of discrimination. But what's happened in the post-war era is the word's become politically charged, hasn't it, Steve?
Yeah, it's like there are many words that change in their specific meaning over time.
Mm.
One that pops into my mind is understand.
Yeah,
because actually, from a original legal term, it was to stand under, to be subject to.
Yeah.
Now it's I comprehend. That's what its current meaning of it is. That's how most people understand it.
Sure.
It's I comprehend what you're saying.
Mm.
Discrimination. Discrimination should mean that, like you say, that you
it's a choice.
You make a choice on something.
Sure.
You choose whether you like or not something. Not that the way it currently is almost demonized as if you're discriminatory, that means that, again, you are obviously an uneducated bigot.
And I can think of a good examples here. There was a case recently here in the UK, and I believe it was a couple that had a B&B, and they refused to, was it a gay couple? It was a gay couple, and they refused to offer them a double room.
Yeah.
And they were pilloried, weren't they, in the press?
Yep.
They were, you know, this was a classic case of discrimination. No, in my mind, and I'm thinking in yours, they discriminated on the basis, this is a business that we run, this is our choice.
Yes, it's our choice.
There's plenty of other places you can go to.
Yeah, and you know, you can, there are plenty of situations where you can discriminate against people through choice.
Mm. And they were making like a moral judgment, which is their right, because they own that business.
Yes. And if they decide that they don't want that, then that's fine. It's no different to, as I'm sure this will appear on at some point on Facebook.
Yeah.
If Facebook listened to this and they decided there was something that they didn't like, then they would look to remove any references to it. That's their decision. That's their discrimination against what we would be saying.
Yes.
But that's their choice.
Very discriminatory towards discerning conscience.
But that's their choice. Yeah. And as the owners of the software that runs that system, then that's their right.
Mm.
And for us to become really up in arms against it would be ridiculous.
Mm.
It's their choice. The fact that they lose a very small number of people from,
sure,
I don't think would hurt them at all. But but yeah, you're right.
It is for me also example by teachers that might choose to not teach sex education as it is at the moment, which is a perversion we were talking about before, which is just filth in my mind. They could face discipline or censure or possibly the sack.
Yeah.
So where is their choice?
Yes. And yet if they were to decide that that they didn't want to, or if they were to decide that they wanted to teach something else that was not on the politically correct list to teach, then again they could face that same censure. And in that case they're being discriminated against.
But when it works the other way,
it
just doesn't come into play, does it?
No.
You don't have any rights the other way around.
The rights are always, rightly or wrongly, I know, I knew that was going to come out like that. But they are always weighted towards the minority groups. Now, there are situations, and there have been plenty of situations, where minority groups have been unfairly treated. The problem is where do you put
Where do you draw the line? Yeah. And again, we're not saying here on Discerning Consciousness, we're not denying, you know, the awful histories of, you know, minority groups, be they black, homosexuals, whoever they might be, because that is documented in history.
Yeah.
That is totally undeniable. But what we're seeing is a fascistic movement towards an exception, sorry, towards an acceptance of norms that really, you know, people more and more just are turning around saying, well, no, we're not agreeing to this. This is not right. This is like an alien installation.
Yeah. When you get a situation where a local authority in the US, because a transgender child complained that they weren't allowed to go into the ladies' or girls' toilets, they then say that they're going to remove all gender comments from all of them.
Mm.
Again, what you're saying is that the minority rules, and that's a very dangerous game to play, because eventually the majority will kick up, and typically what happens is it will go too far the other way,
and it will just switch.
And it will just swing the other way.
Yeah,
if that's allowed to happen, but that's the.
Do you think that's part of the plan? It's like to almost stoke people, poke them up so much that there's just going to be a violent outpouring. But maybe that's why Trump was allowed to win.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah, maybe that's why the Brexit vote happened the way that it did. I don't feel that that is necessarily the case, because I don't feel that there is the overall control of people.
There's not, as we've discussed before, there isn't this one singularity or collection of groups that are in control. It's almost like things are so weird and crazy now, it's all up for grabs.
Yeah, and I think anyone's trying to grab an advantage where they can.
Yes.
And if they see it.
And lay claim to it.
Yeah. So
I'm responsible for that.
I'm sure there's a lot of people that were probably initially didn't want somebody like Trump in, and then thought, well, actually, if he gets in and I help him, you never know.
Just to cover a little bit more in depth about minority rights, Steve, for our listeners. So we've had recently here in the BBC Black and British Season, which has been a series of programs retracing British history, but trying to take account of the how black people have played a part in our history, which I have no problem. But for me, it's this very, again, this Orwellian agenda of it's divide and rule. Surely it's human history.
Yes.
And the real history of humanity is whereby, the majority have been oppressed by the rich by the elite.
But
they want us to believe it's white against black.
Yes, but the actual minority that actually is ruling is the rich minority. Mm. And I still do believe that by the political agenda that they're pushing, they are just making us look away from them.
Mm.
They're making us look at everything other than that. Mm.
If you're a criminal and you want to hide your crime, great way of doing it, isn't it?
Yeah, you make everyone, well, it's the classic trick of the illusionist, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, you make them look elsewhere so they don't actually see what you're really doing.
Mm. I mean, linked to this also, in America, I've seen Facebook posts and articles, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter movement. I look at it and I just think,
human lives matter.
Yeah, human lives. Again, it's so contradictory. Yeah.
And how much of the Black Lives Matters is politically driven and politically driven by people that are not black?
No, exactly.
You know, they're getting a result that they want because they're stoking those fires. They're making this racial issue in the vast majority of cases, there's little or no difference between people in basic structures, in basic biology. There's not a massive difference.
Mm.
There are differences in where we've evolved from.
Mm.
If you look at the physiological differences that certain areas put on people, there was a film, White Men Can't Jump.
Mm.
Because generally, white men can't jump as well as. Mm. You don't get many basketball Eskimo players, do you?
No.
You know, there are physical differences between certain cultures because of the actual life that they had to
live. And the ludicrous is, good to bring in this point, Steve, is we're supposed to be in denial of that. And no, it's just a statement of fact that, you know, if you are born in a hot climate, right, that's going to affect your physiology, your psychology, you know, in certain ways that will be different towards someone that's born into a cold climate.
Yes, it's got to affect you differently. It doesn't matter how, and the actual culture that you're born into and brought up with, that will affect your overall life choices. Mm. It's a generalization, but you know, there are plenty of cases where certainly people from Asian areas are very, very hard working because of the culture that they've actually
have a strong work ethic. Yeah.
It's been, you know, they've had it drummed into them at an early age that they need to put that in. There's plenty of Western culture where pretty much it's the world owes me a job.
Mm.
I don't need to work at it. I shouldn't have to work at it. It should just come and fall on my lap.
Mm.
And that's a definite cultural difference. Mm. And that drives a completely different mindset as to how people behave.
What we encourage, certainly here in Britain, amongst the younger generation, what is encouraged is an entitlement culture.
Yeah, yeah. Why can't I have that?
Mm.
You know, I'm allowed to have this, and it's. I wouldn't say it's completely true across all classes, because that changes as well.
Mm.
Certainly, in this country, there are differences depending on the class that you come from.
Mm.
There are defined differences in how people behave and what they expect in life.
Mm.
There's no doubt that there are differences. There's differences between men and women.
Mm. Mm.
This is one that's always a dodgy area that you question that whether there's differences between. Of course, there are differences between men and women.
Mm.
Physically, psychologically, there are differences between men and women. And that's just based biology. That's how we've developed
A statement of fact.
Yeah, over hundreds of thousands, hundreds of millions of years, we've developed into having certain different abilities.
Mm.
It's not to say that there isn't a job that a woman can't do.
No.
Because there are some women that can do any job that a man can do. There are certain things that women can do that men can't do.
Yeah, and for me, just bring it back to political correctness, is what political correctness, the attempt or what it's trying to say is that these differences don't exist.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. And I think the sinister part of political correctness, just relating it back a little bit to this denial of our differences in terms of where we come from and our culture, right? Our tribal roots, our tribal ethnic roots, is this is all leading towards the creation of a one mono sort of corporate culture where we're just consumers, where to, you know, have consideration for your elders and, you know, how they work the land and these old ideas about life and existence, that's all outdated, that's all outmoded. For me, that's a deliberate thing that's going on to disempower people, because then basically people have a very weak sense of identity. Do you agree with that?
Yeah,
and they're much more easily manipulated by the system.
Yeah, and they're much more prone to the, oh, God, I have the latest shiny, shiny.
They're good consumers.
Yeah, and I think the film WALL-E was probably the future point that we could end up with if it goes that way.
Mm.
But yeah, it is ridiculous that we are not allowed to accept the fact that there are differences.
Mm.
It's like suggesting that, you know, that somebody that's taller than someone else shouldn't get something from a top shelf for that person. You know, you're discriminating against me because I'm shorter. No, actually, I was helping you because I was getting that because you couldn't reach it.
Yeah,
it's that sort of illogical process.
And I would say, just to add at this point, these differences in cultures and national characteristics is why people travel. It's why people love travel.
Yeah, let's go and have a look at another culture that's exactly the same as ours. No.
Yeah.
That is one of the greatest draws to travelling, is actually seeing how other people live, how their culture differs from your own. Yeah. And to turn around and say, well, we're not going to have any differences. The fact that, you know, you know just within Europe itself, you have the different characteristics of all of the European countries.
Mm.
And to turn around and say that we don't want those differences, we want them all to be multicultural, I think is a huge
It's huge almost insult. Like the denial of anthropology as a whole subject area. And again, not to get too conspiratorial mindset on this, if that's a word, but it is for me part of the post-humanist agenda. It is, you know, it's almost like, you know, our soul rootedness is irrelevant. You know, that's essentially what this agenda is all about for me. Just quickly want to also touch upon postmodernism, this awful clunky phrase, which is promoted. I went to university, it was promoted widely whilst I was at university, widely and wildly.
Yes.
So I did social science subject in colleges and universities across Western Europe, US, Canada and Australasia. And the key component really of the agenda is to pervert and again and undermine society, because the idea is behind postmodernism, just very quickly, is the belief that we can no longer say or know what has intrinsic value.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if we apply that to the art world, that means that, you know, Tracy Emin's bed, unmade bed, apparently is worth over £1 million.
Yeah.
Which again is an insult and is an effrontery to human life.
And as we've said before, you know, you look at the contradictions in all of this. So there have been plenty of displays within quite a number of quite distinguished art exhibitions.
Mm.
And in some cases, the images that have been displayed would be considered pornography.
Mm. But in that context.
But because it's in a lovely big old building with a lot of old people saying, oh, isn't this marvellous?
Mm.
And look at the meaning behind this. The meaning is it's pornography.
Mm.
That's really the reality of it, but they get away with it because it's seen as politically correct at that time.
Mm. There's a lot of what you're alluding to, Steve, as with a lot of these things, there's a lot of money to follow the PC route. Whatever colour or ethnicity or religion or mental or physical capability of that person, there's a lot of money to get on that gravy train.
And that always comes down to the biggest drive, isn't it, how much money can we make out of something? I mean, again, how many people end up suing because they've been offended by something and getting a massive amount of money based on political correctness? Because, you've offended me with what you said.
Mm.
How many people have lost jobs because of what they may have said or done?
Just quickly to touch upon this idea of someone being offended from what was said. It's quite It was well widely reported at the time, it was in January of this year, that Chris Gayle, the captain of the West Indian team, this is related to the whole idea of sexism, he flirted, it was actually really quite funny, flirted with an Australian presenter. He was obviously playing in, I believe it was a one-day cricket match. And what he said to this reporter was, to see your eyes for the first time is nice. Hopefully we can have a drink afterwards. Don't blush, baby. Okay, so on one level, a little bit crass. I know he's a little bit of a womanizer, this Gayle, but, yes, you know, I think if this woman was anything worth her salt, she would have said, yeah, in your dreams, Gayle, you know. And what she actually said afterwards was, he said it was a joke. It was a simple, you know, it was a simple joke that was going on. Entertainment, things get out of proportion, but these things happen. What she said, McLaughlin, she said his date request was a little bit disappointing because I'm not used to seeing that. What, so an attractive woman's never been asked out. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
And secondly, she said, I don't really want to be the subject of such conversations.
Which we know is not, doesn't matter whether she wants to or not.
Yeah,
it's never going to happen. So no, you can fly in the face of reality if you want.
Exactly, because it's a denial of the male female interplay.
Yeah.
It's why we're all here.
Yeah.
And for that little, okay, a little bit of a childish thing to say, knowing how the media works, he was fined $10,000.
I mean,
sorry, Australian dollars, I should say.
I'm offended that the first thing he thought about was her and not the cricket.
Exactly, yeah.
That would offend me more.
Sure,
but and that's...
But for me, it's like if she'd been a little bit more savvy, maybe a little bit more worldly-wise, she would have tapped him on the shoulder and, as I say, in your dreams, Gayle, you know?
Yeah, and that's probably that would have been the better way to handle it.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, yeah, what he said wasn't right.
No,
yeah, there isn't. And certainly to say that during a TV report, where it's going to go out and be seen by
people.
That's
my point. It was misguided.
Yeah. If he did it in private and she rebuffed him, fair enough.
Mm.
So, yes, he's chosen completely the wrong time. Has he done it because it's got him some lines on in the newspaper? Yes, he has.
Mm.
Has he probably got more than enough money to pay for that? I don't know if he even...
Is he sexist? Who knows?
Probably... Based on that, you probably suggest that he might be, but is it a big deal and is it actually newsworthy?
Exactly. And should he have the right to say that? Yes. Or do we want to live in a namby-pamby world where, you know, you're scared to offend anyone?
It's down to this, you have to have some responsibility for what you say.
Mm.
And okay, he's had some feedback for what he said, but is it a newsworthy item?
Mm.
I'd question whether it was a big newsworthy item, yeah.
Mm.
And to make a big deal about it is just, again, to push this PC.
I think, what I just want to say on this, for me, is it's to push this agenda in the mind of the public that, careful what you say.
Yeah, because it could be reported and you could face a fine.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful way of pushing that particular agenda, isn't it?
Yeah. So, lastly, I think what we want to just touch on in terms of the whole PC agenda is health and safety. Dreaded health and safety, Governor. Well,
and I'm going to fall on one particular side of things briefly. Certainly in the UK and certainly in other countries, they'll have a similar system.
Mm.
So in the UK, we have the Health and Safety Executive. And there's a whole load of things that the health and safety executives say, you should try and do this, or you should try and do that, and don't do this, and don't do that. There are bits and pieces like that. The biggest problem is the interpretation of people of what the health and safety executive have said.
Mm.
Because the reality is, most of the time, they want people to do what needs to be done in the safest way possible. They don't generally prescribe in great detail what you can and cannot do.
Right.
What happens from that is that...
So who does that?
That will be whatever local authority or local management look upon and say, whoa, we'd better write something based on this.
When you see these stories in the press all the time, it would have been on the level of the local authority rather than the health and safety executive.
In most cases, unless it's it definitively says... And the health and safety executive ruled that this is what should happen. It won't be directly from them.
So it won't be health and safety, the health and safety executive saying that window cleaners can't use ladders.
Yeah, and the reality is they'll say that window cleaners need to be careful when they're using ladders, sure, because there's been a lot of people falling, sure, off of them and hurting themselves.
Sure.
So a local authority will then turn around and say, right, well, the only way we can deal with this is...
So they go extreme.
Yeah, you can't use ladders because we can't...
They'll be scared of litigation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they turn around and say, oh, no, it's all right, carry on using ladders, and somebody falls down, you said it was all right to climb the ladder. Mm. There's situations where, in some cases, businesses go far, far higher than the level that the health and safety would actually require them to go to. Mm. And in most cases, they do that because they've sat down, they've done some form of risk analysis themselves, and they're concerned that if they don't go that far, they'll end up in litigation.
Sure, yeah.
Certainly any company that is American-owned, they are very well-versed in any form of risk analysis, and they will always err on the side of caution for, certainly for most of the tasks that they do, mm, because the American culture is full of litigation.
Mm.
Mm. So, yeah, there is... There are a load of things that the health and safety say that that are misinterpreted, in my opinion.
Mm, that's interesting. Right, just to round up this episode, we're going to talk about the whole thing of political correctness gone mad.
Yes. That
you hear of. Some amusing little anecdotes to leave our listeners with. So I'll start, Steve.
Go on.
This is a classic one. Classic one. So we have... Spotted Dick, which are American and Canadian, and other listeners may not have heard of. Do you want to explain what Spotted Dick is?
Suet, raisins, and currants, I believe, is right. It's a pudding.
Okay, so a classic English dessert has been renamed to avoid embarrassment. The traditional pud, Spotted Dick, has been given the title Spotted Richard after UK council bosses feared the original name might cause offence.
Right. This is one where it just shows how political correctness goes too far. Mm. In San Francisco, authorities have installed small plastic privacy screens on library computers so that people can continue to exercise their right to watch pornography in the library without children being exposed to it. No, it's staggering, isn't it?
Moving on. A UK council has banned the term brainstorming and replaced it with thought showers, as local lawmakers thought the term may offend epileptics. What about, it might offend people who are fans of golden showers.
Yeah. Dennis the Menace, I can remember, yes, him as a child.
Yeah,
A classic Beano character. Was well renowned for his relatively violent behaviour.
Yeah.
There's a recent BBC reincarnation of the cartoon, and he's been completely rewritten. Certainly doesn't use his catapult. Doesn't really use weapons. The catapult was one of the main things with Dennis the Menace, and doesn't really give other kids grief. The whole point of Dennis the Menace was he was a menace who always got his comeuppance.
Yeah.
That was the part of the story.
That was the moral.
Yeah. And we've done away with that, and we're just saying he's a bit of a loudmouth, nasty boy. Okay.
So leave our listeners with this one. A school in Seattle renamed its Easter eggs Spring Spheres to avoid causing offence to people who did not celebrate Easter.
No, not because they had springs in them. Okay.
No, that's hard to believe. So we'll just start, leave our listeners really with the perspective of be aware of this gender at play. Okay, you know, it's quite sinister what's going on. But, I mean, there's not a lot you can do about it. So the point is really is to not get angry about it. Because I know time to time when you see it in your face and it affects you on a personal level, it can, you know, it can get quite serious, can't it, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Like we said, there are people that have...
Lives can be ruined.
Yeah, careers lost, jobs
relationships
lost,
end.
Relationships end.
Yeah.
All sorts of things can happen just purely because of this politically correct agenda that has been pushed into everyone's face.
Mm.
When reality is, it's not a social driven norm.
No, and it has no objective truth. It's not placed in reality. And we would say it's really a key part of the matrix, isn't it, really?
Yeah. So keep being politically incorrect, but just be careful how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, thank you all for listening, and we look forward to tuning in again soon.
If you've got any comments,
yeah,
please.
If you've got any comments, please log into our Discerning Consciousness Facebook page, and you can message us on there or leave comments. So thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Bye. Cheers. Bye.
Trouble with the trees, for the maples want more sunlight. And